The future of Israel.
The message that the gospel is giving now to all the world through the radio, through the ministry, and through conversation in the backyards and in public talks and so forth, amongst those who believe God's promises to mankind. These are going forth throughout all the nations of the world, because the time has come when even the world in general recognizes that the old order which held before 1914 can never be brought back again. We're in a transition period when some new order is in the making, and when there is much discussion and much suffering and the breaking up of old institutions and the establishment of new hopes and new ambitions. But in all of these transition periods, we find there is a destruction of the old and a preparation for the new. Now, about 2,000 years ago, Quirinius, a man stood upon the Acropolis in Athens, a messenger of the Lord with a message to Gentiles as well as Jews. And he declared, as recorded in the 17th chapter of the book of Acts, which tells of the Acts of the Apostles, that God had made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the whole earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation. It pains one to read that text and to think over every phrase that is involved in it. He tells us there, after telling them that God is not one who is like the images that they made, but being the creator of all, is therefore greater than any understanding that they could make. Notice that he has made of one blood all nations. They're all mankind, but of different races. And they are to dwell on the face of the earth, you see. As he puts it here, all the face of the earth. Now we see that there are at present some places that are not very easy to dwell in the midst of the Sahara and out in much of the American desert, the desert of Gobi in northern Asia, and places like that. But nevertheless, the promise includes that all of this curse that has been upon the earth because of mankind's disobedience is going to be removed, and that the desert shall blossom. And the Lord will plant in the desert the olive tree and the pine tree and the box tree together and beautify the place of his sanctuary. That is, the place of his feet, which he says is his footstool of the earth. Notice here he says also that he hath determined the times before appointed. That is, the times when each nation would have these things made plain to them. Appointed time, foreseen, you see, determined by the Lord before any of these things came to pass. And furthermore, the bounds of their habitation. Ultimately, all the nations are to share, as the promise was given to Abraham, in the blessings of the earth. He said that in thy seed, and he included Abraham in it, he said, in thee am thy seed. So Abraham will be there. And he said, shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And that means a blessing not merely to the Jew, but to the Gentile too. All are going to be included. And in the 45th of Isaiah, a well-known statement there in the 18th verse, he tells us that in the making of the earth, in the formation of it, he didn't make it in vain. He formed it to be inhabited. He created it not in vain, not to be destroyed, as some think, because Satan has so mixed up things in the earth and so made vile many of the things that God created correctly in the beginning, that the only thing that God can do with it is to burn the whole thing up. That's not very successful, is it? That would indicate that the adversary was somehow mightier than God was, but not so. The scriptures tell us that the thing is the other way about. That the adversary, Satan, is but a created being. That his power is limited. and that while the Lord will allow evil and permit evil in the earth, as we read the scriptures, it tells us that that permission of evil is for the training of mankind. The training of the human race, not the Jew only, but the Gentile. Well now, in the creation of mankind, he tells us that it was the purpose to give man the dominion of earth, all that was in it. And in the Psalms and in the quotation in Hebrews, he says he left nothing that was not subjected in the plan of God to mankind. So mankind will have ultimately the blessings that are all of them hid in the earth, and we cannot dream yet. We're just beginning to scratch and find out the wonders that God has hidden in the earth for mankind to enjoy. But we are already finding out, as some of our learned men tell us, scientists and our philosophers, that the inventions are becoming so deep and so full of power and energy that mankind must learn to cooperate and work together and help one another, else they will destroy each other off the face of the earth. And furthermore, that we are learning that mankind is finding these inventions, these discoveries, so powerful that he must learn how to use them, or else he will destroy himself. You know how it is in training one young man to be an engineer. You don't turn him loose and give him the care of the whole generator and the switchboard and everything and say, go to work. Why, no. You know that he'll injure himself if he doesn't blow up the whole plant. What do? You send him to school. You teach him the elements of every part of the electricity and magnetism and mathematics and so forth, so that he will understand the operation of those things. And after that training, then you give him likely some things that relate to the actual power. And as he shows confidence and ability, you'll stand that until he is made the chief engineer of the whole plant, or the superintendent. And we see there the necessity, even of the small things of everyday life, of a training to know how to use them so that they'll be a blessing to the user and a blessing to those who are outside, who are benefited by it. Now the Lord tells us that he formed this planet to be inhabited, and it's going to be. In the 115th Psalm, in the 16th verse, it says, "The heavens are even the heavens are the Lord's, but the earth hath he given to the children of men." That is man's home. And curiously also, we see that all man's thoughts and plans are centered upon material things. Whenever he thinks of a dwelling beyond the present life, he thinks of beautiful homes, beautiful gardens, and waters, and trees, and flowers. What is that? That's the earth. That's all. All he can think of are earthly things. Even his imaginations and pictures of heaven are material and earthly things. He can't think of anything else. Man is made for the earth, and the earth made for man. And they both are a complement one to the other. So with this thought in mind, we see that, as the Lord tells us in the creation of mankind, he made man to gradually expand his control over the earth and his cultivation of it until the whole planet was brought under complete control. As Paul says in the New Testament, at the present time, we see not yet all things brought under it. But we do see a beginning of it. And we see more and more accomplished now, indicating that someday man is going to have that dominion. And furthermore, he is going to be trained and is being trained now so that he can use it. Well now, in this operation of mankind, the Lord tells us that he saw fit in the beginning of his material creation of man upon the earth to permit the wrong use of everything, to permit men and angels to misuse the things that he had placed there in order, by experience, that should learn the results of that misuse, and that it involved the misuse of the mind, of the powers of the hand, and of the body generally, everything in life. And mankind has misused most of it. We find that woe and trouble are in every nation because of failure to use common sense and obedience to the laws of nature. These laws of nature are what are all extending throughout the whole universe. They are the laws upon which the universe is built, And God is just asking his human creatures to work in harmony with those laws, and he gets good results. If he does not work in harmony but against them, then he can't expect anything but failure and disaster. And that's what comes. So we're learning the lesson that disobedience and letting yourself go wild or sowing wild oats or careless use, if anything, does not pay. That it sows the seeds of death, the loss of life, and everything that life includes, happiness and blessing and the exercise of your faculties in every direction. Now, that is wise in the Lord, for he tells us in the ages to come there isn't going to be iniquity anywhere in his universe. It's going to be blotted out. And so it's allowed only for a time. And that time is the 7,000 years outlined in the scriptures as Jehovah's Day of Rest. Now in this permission of evil, we see that he allowed mankind to take his choice, left him open to the deceptions of a higher being who had gone wrong, and the Lord let him go wrong, because even the angels were to learn lessons, and mankind took the wrong choice because the cost seemed to him too great. He didn't know his Creator as thoroughly as some have learned since, and probably when he comes back again in the resurrection, he will have learned a great lesson. Because he lived 930 years in those adverse conditions before he died. And in the operation of these things, as the evil spread in the earth and disobedience went on, the Lord set a limit in two ways, to the amount of evil and to the time when it should be permitted. And we remember that he allowed it for a time before the flood until the earth became filled with violence, and then he stopped it and began a new heavens and a new earth after the flood. And that flood was universal. We find the traditions of it in all parts of the globe and marks of it there. And the flood brought in a change in the heavens, that is, the literal heavens, and in the soil, and in the climate, and in the life of mankind. And then we remember that God set about preparing for the end of the evil conditions in the world. And what did he do? Just what you and I would have done. He selected some who had faith in the promises of God. Noah was one, then Abraham, and he promised Abraham that if he would comply with certain conditions, the Lord would use him as the father of many nations, and through him bless all the families of the earth. And after him, he chose one nation out of the nations of the earth. Now, if you were going to prepare things and to teach mankind a lesson, you would like a model amongst the others, wouldn't you? You would like to have some selected to whom you would tell certain promises and blessings of the future and train them. And so the Lord tells us that he selected the Jewish people. And he warns them. He tells us that in the book of Deuteronomy that because he had given them the law, which he had not given to any other nation, and because he had called them to be a peculiar people, he said, lest you get proud and think it's because I'm a wonder and I'm better than other people, he said, no. The Lord didn't choose you because you were greater than any others in number, nor because you were better than other nations. Rather, he said that the Jews were the most stiff-necked and disobedient nation anywhere. He said in the book of Ezekiel, if I had sent your prophet to the Gentiles, they would have received him. And the only time when he did send the prophet to the Gentiles, they did receive him. Nineveh repented under the preaching of Jonah. And the sentence that the Lord pronounced was delayed until later on when they forgot and began to practice iniquity again. And so he said because they were amongst the fewest in number, that the reason he chose them was because they were the children, the descendants of Abraham. Now, Abraham had many descendants. They spread out over quite a deal of the globe. But you remember that the promise was, in Isaac shall thy seed be called. And then you remember when Isaac had children and Jacob and Esau was born, the scriptures tell us that before either of them were born, that one was chosen above the other. So it wasn't because either of them had done right or wrong. They hadn't. They hadn't come into life yet. But God chose the one before the other because he knew the one, what he'd be like. and chose that one to pass on the promises of the future to him, Jacob. And we read of Jacob and his conduct, and Esau and his conduct, and we read that of Esau there came great people, 12 dukes of Edom, and he promised there an inheritance to them, a land that would be on to them. And then he also promised that Abraham should have the land, and he limited it to the 15th chapter of Genesis. And he gave it quite a large extent. He said, from the great river Euphrates to the sea on the west and to the borders of Egypt down at the south end. And that land belongs in promise to Palestine. Now the Lord owns the earth. He can give it to whomsoever he will. You and I buy parcels of land because of the present order and the legal status, but we know that after our death that land doesn't belong to us anymore. That ownership is void. It passes on to others, sometimes and sometimes not. But we realize that we are here as a limited order of things that will have a replacement with a better order by and by. And that during this period we are learning, as the Lord told the nations, that they are learning the results of evil. And at the present time, they're learning more evil than they are good. As the prophet Malachi put it, that now we call the proud happy. They that work wickedness are set out. Yea, even they that tempt God are delivered. But he says the time is coming when ye shall return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not. That the Lord has a time set for the end of the permission of selfishness and evil in the earth, and that time is very shortly ahead of us. Now, in the selection of the children of Israel as the representative of God among the nations, and as we see, not because they were better, no more numerous, but because just that they were the children of Abraham, and Abraham had the promise, and his faith secured it to him. And we see that he pointed out, he gave them the laws, and those laws that were God-given have been the foundation of the best laws that mankind has been able to make anywhere. We find that they are the ideals. And in our American nation, we see that our original Constitution was based upon the goodness and the equity of those laws. And in our flag, we symbolize those laws and those ideals. We're always glad that our flag wasn't a dragon, or it wasn't a lion, or it wasn't anything else, but a symbol of better things. The stars, the stripes, the blue, the red, all had a symbol. I will not have the time to discuss them. But the thought is that in these various nations that have descended from Noah, originally from Adam, that they all have a place in the plan of God. We'll reach some promises to that effect. That each is going to have their share of the earth, and they're going to own it and enjoy it, and it will be their inheritance forever. Now, that doesn't mean that every, Scandinavian will have to live in Scandinavia, but he can't move around and through the earth. I think there'll be more travel than there is now by and by, with better methods. That everybody will have a home, but they'll be free to enjoy the whole earth. And that all the neighbors and friends will help him to enjoy it, help each other. But at present we see that the earth is not merely well divided, but that a lot of the divisions are nonsensical, they're not logical at all, and that furthermore it is due to those in power, those who have the power. They've been grasping it through the centuries and have been destroying those nations which didn't have the power to defend themselves. Selfishness. Well, that's the practice of evil, you see, and the promise is that by and by those things, under the rule of the iron rod of the king that shall come, that those things will be subjected, not allowed to injure anyone else, until finally they are disappeared and destroyed out of the earth. But in the discussion that we are going through now, we see that the Lord gave this one nation, whom he had chosen out of the other, in order to give them the code of law and the promises and the prophecies that would spread and include all mankind. And so, as our Lord told the woman of Samaria, salvation is of the Jews. And we are recognizing that fact, because the Mohammedans and the various peoples that pretend any knowledge of the true God all recognize that this law and the promises connected with it are the center of their hopes, of deliverance of inheritance. And we see then that while mankind are divided under many beliefs and in many localities, that the Lord is going to give each one a proper inheritance. Now, the land of Palestine is promised to the Jews. Now, it is true that many other nations have inhabited it, and the promise, however, is going to be fulfilled. And that promise will not be to the detriment of other nations, but to the blessing of them, to the helping of them to find their happiness and their enjoyment and their inheritance in the earth. Now, he tells us in the 32nd chapter of Deuteronomy and the 8th verse. I'll read that because it is an important statement and one that is turning out already in the prospects to be fulfilled. When the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, that is, in his plan and in his mind, when he separated the sons of Adam, you see, that includes all mankind, every nation, he set the bounds of the people, the nation, according to the number of the children of Israel. Paul quoted that in the text we first used, made of one blood all nations of men, set the bounds of their habitation and the times appointed for their entering into their inheritance and their knowledge of the Lord. And so we find that the plans of the Lord include first the training of the children of Israel, a remnant from among them. He knew they would be a disobedient nation, and they did. They were. They slew the prophets. They destroyed the things that God gave them as records. We realize in the records given there of the finding of the law book, they'd even forgotten there was a law book. Even the priests who had charge of it didn't know it was there. They had so far gone away from the practice of the Lord's commandments. But the Lord was patient with them. He brought punishment after punishment upon them. And he knew and foretold that they would disobey. But he said, in the latter days, if ye are circumcised in mind and heart, and if you repent of your evil deeds, I will return my favor to you and bring you again into this land that I promised to give unto your father. We see that now happening before our eyes. Their hearts are being returned unto the Lord. Not fully. They're still in much unbelief about many of the Lord's commandments and promises. But nevertheless, they're being regathered there out of all the nations. And this was one of the signs that was given as stating, as the Lord put it, that know that the kingdom is at hand even at the doors. And so we see that these things indicate that not only the hope of the Jew, but the hope of every nation is to be included. But as the Lord dealt with the Jew and separated them from other nations in order to give some nations who would keep the records, the promises, the prophecies, and the hopes of mankind, he gave them to the Jews. And we see that his promise is that when the kingdom is set up, that the Jew will be the most prepared of all the nations to have the Lord deal with them. And so he tells us in Jeremiah, the 3rd chapter, the prophecies there, he says, the time will come at that day, he says, at that time they shall call Jerusalem the throne of Jehovah, and all nations shall be gathered unto it, to the name of the Lord, to Jerusalem. Neither shall they walk any more after the imagination of those of their evil heart. And he tells of the regathering of Israel in those days. And he asks this question, how shall I put thee among the children and give thee a pleasant land, a goodly heritage of the Lord of hosts among the nations? The Jews had been disobedient. They'd slain the prophets. They had despised the messages sent unto them. He said, how can I give you a place among the nations when you've done all this? And he said that nevertheless the Lord has foreseen that and made provisions for it. He said, thou shalt call me my father and shalt not turn away from me. Indicating a change of heart, a humbling of their pride and of their self-confidence, and that is just ahead for the Jewish people. an experience that will destroy their self-confidence and their pride by the means of letting other nations come in upon them and almost wipe them out. But you see, here's the question that the Lord puts. How shall I give thee a place among the nations? They don't deserve it, but nevertheless, they're going to get it. And none of us can say we deserve much at the Lord's hand, can we? We're all guilty, all are sinners, and some are more, in the eyes of their fellow men, greater sinners than others, but none are perfect. And so he points out that all the nations in his arrangement and time are to receive the blessing, but that the blessing will be given to those who are most acquainted with it, the most acquainted with the promises, that know something about it. And so it'll be the Jewish people. They'll be regathered in Palestine, and as he says, Jerusalem will be the capital of the world. But as he says, it's not for the Jew only, but while it is first for him, it will nevertheless be for all the nations, as was read in the lecture just previous to this. In the book of Acts, he first will rebuild the Jewish nation as in the days of old, and then it will be a blessing go out from them to all the Gentiles, every nation. And for that period of time, a whole 1,000 years has been arranged by Jehovah. Now we think of 1 year as being a fair length of time, 10 years as seeing an awful change. Here things go out of date in 5 years. There's a practice, progress being made now more rapid than in the whole human history. And so as the human race grows in number and the minds are awakened by the increase of knowledge and invention, we find that greater progress is possible. Events can happen more quickly and the results be more evident quicker. And so during that kingdom, we are told that when man learned the truth about God's character, that he is not a God of eternal torment, neither is he a God of hideous design, but rather that he is the God that sums up the best and noblest of all the traits that he has put into his fellow creatures, that is, his creatures here on the earth, that he has those in the highest extent, the highest development, the most unlimited expansion, you might say, that love, mercy, gentleness, power, and all of these qualities are in the great Creator, and that they are in without limitation, but that they all work in balanced harmony, one with the other. No cross purposes in the Lord's arrangement of character, but rather he has everything planned out, and it will all be accomplished in due time in accordance with his will and in harmony with his character. That love will be the actuating impulse in every creature in his universe, angels and men. But that takes practice to learn what love means and how to exercise it. You can give too much love to your children and spoil them, or you can withhold that love and leave them destitute. And so we find that both cases are here before us in the world, but we learn, need to learn that, as some call it, the middle of the road practice, where you don't go to either extreme, but you try to exercise a balanced mind, a sound mind, as the apostles call it. So then, while these promises are given to the Jew first, both in the New and in the Old Testament, it tells us that from the Jew these are to go out and to be inherited and enjoyed by all mankind. Every man in his own order. Now, we have certain scriptures to read in connection with this. In the prophecies of Isaiah, he dwelt there very plainly upon certain statements, and we'll read a few and then show the application of them. In Isaiah 11, the last part, it says that in that day, verses 10 onward, there shall be a root of Jesse, that is, a life-giving root from which will spring the blessings that will come to mankind, which shall stand for an ensign, that is, a standard for the people. To it will the Gentiles, the nations, seek, and the rest that he gives will be a glorious one. And that word rest is the Hebrew word menucha, and it means a home in which there is security and sympathy, kindness and love, a sanctuary for the heart and the mind. His rest shall be glorious, and it comes to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people which shall be left from Assyria, from Egypt, from Pathros and Cush, from Elam and Shinar and Hamath, and from the isles of the sea. The second time means that he did it first in the return from Babylon, from the captivity then. At the second time, he says it will be from all nations, and that he will bring them into the land of Palestine. And he said, he shall set up an ensign for the nations, you see, and shall assemble the outcasts of Israel and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. The envy of Ephraim shall depart, the adversaries of Judah be cut off. Ephraim shall not envy Judah, nor Judah vex Ephraim. But they shall fly upon the shoulders of the Philistines to the west, spoil them of the east together, lay their hands upon Edom and Moab and the children of Ammon and Beda. That is, they shall learn the laws of God in harmony with the Jew and learn to obey those laws and become the children of the Lord. And the Lord shall utterly destroy the tongue of the Egyptian sea. And with his mighty wind he shall shake his hand over the river and smite it in the seven streams and make men to go over dry shod. His wording there calls our minds back to the Exodus from Egypt, in which the Lord delivered the children of Israel. And he says it's a sample of how he is going to deliver the whole human race from their oppression and from their blindness. And then he says, before we get to that, you see, destroy the tongue of the Egyptian sea. Well, that literally, of course, is the Red Sea, over which the children of Israel passed long ago. But the use of this indicates that the tongue means the language, the expression, the message that is sent out. In other words, the Lord will change the messages that are going out in the world now that are more or less a misunderstanding and misinterpretation of God and his character and his plans, and he'll give the people the truth. And with his mighty wind, shall he shake his hand over the river, that is all the channels of propagation and propaganda that go throughout the world, and will destroy their sources, as he said. Smite it in the seven streams. Destroy the present things completely, as he said, that he will make all things new. And we see all of the institutions of mankind, with even the best of them, the goodwill that is intended, they're all mixed up more or less with an incapacity to do as they'd like, as much as they'd like, and as often as they'd like. And furthermore, it's a misunderstanding of Jehovah and of his plans, and we see their frustration on every side. And he says, there shall be a highway for the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria, as it was to Israel in the day that it came up of Egypt, and highway for their return. In Isaiah 19, he elaborates upon that a little more in the last part. He said in the 23rd verse, in that day shall there be an highway out of Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrians shall come into Egypt, and the Egyptians into Assyria, and the Egyptians shall serve with the Assyrians. They learn to cooperate and be helpful one to another, all the nations. But that will take time and training. In that day shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land. You see, a go-between to bring the nations into harmony with one another and teach them the ways of the Lord. Whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, say, blessed be Egypt, my people. You see, that would be quite a change, wouldn't it? And is Assyria the work of mine hand, and Israel mine inheritance. He includes them all, you see, as his own. Speaks here of Egypt, which in the olden days was the heart of the learning and the, you might say, science and art there. And on the other hand, the people of Assyria might represent the working class. And if this be taken as an interpretation, which is allowable, it would mean the bringing of those who had had the greater privileges of life into mingling with those who had the hard things of life and the hard experiences, teaching them to understand one another, to learn to cooperate. Many firms are learning that already. Procter & Gamble, Rice & Hutchins, various others are giving a profit-sharing plan to their employees, that their employees can be part owners of the company. And that receipt builds up their interest in it. They're interested in what they're doing because they're not only serving the public, but they're serving themselves. Well, then when everybody gets a share in what is being done, and according to the products that they themselves are putting forth, the energy of the time, well, you see, there'll be a more just arrangement in the earth. That will come in due time, for the Lord will be the guide. Now, to assure us that this is not confined to the Jew only, he mentions other nations here, but you know, Abraham was changed, that is, his name was changed. He said, thou shalt not be called Abram any longer, but Abraham. Now, Abram meant exalted father. Abraham means the father of nations. Well, now we know he was naturally the father of one nation, the Jewish people, and of some others like the Arabians and the people of Esau and Edom, and quite a number of the others, Midianites and so forth, that were scattered abroad. But here he says he'll be the father of many. And in the New Testament, in the third chapter of Romans, he tells us that that promise meant that Abraham would be the heir of the world. The heir of the world. The father, therefore, of many nations, in a sense that included them all. That's in Romans 4, 13. For the promise that he should become heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law covenant, but through the righteousness of faith. So we see he is to be the father of many nations. And then he tells us in the 12th chapter of Jeremiah how that is to come about. In Jeremiah 12, verses 14 to 17. And he brings in here Israel and the other nations. Thus saith Jehovah against all mine evil neighbors that touch the inheritance which I have caused my people Israel to inherit. Now what is the inheritance of Israel? It's the land of Palestine. Who are the neighbors that interfered with it? Well, the Gentile nations. There's always been more or less jealousy against the Jews. And we see here he tells us what's going to happen. He says, thus saith Jehovah against all mine evil neighbors that touch or interfere with the inheritance that I have given my people Israel. Behold, I will pluck them, these Gentiles, out of their land, and pluck out the house of Judah from among them. That is taking place at the present time. Not merely the house of Judah being plucked from among them, but likewise the Gentile nation, their powers and governments are going down. Disintegrating. And then he goes on to say, and it shall come to pass, after that I have plucked them out, I will return and have compassion on them and will bring them, these Gentiles. This is a description of what he'll do for them, not merely for the Jews. It shall come to pass, he says, I will return and have compassion on them and will bring them again, every man to his heritage and every man to his land. And he says further, it shall come to pass, if they will diligently learn the ways of my people, to swear by my name, that is, to consecrate to the Lord, take an oath of obedience to him, saying, the Lord liveth, that is, that thou art the son of the living God, as some said of Jesus, and the God of life, the fountain of life, thou art the Lord, the living one, the source of life. As they, these Gentiles, taught my people, the Jews, in times past, to swear by Baal, that is, taught them to worship idols, he said, if then they learn the ways of my people, then shall they be built in the midst of my people. The Lord will receive them under the new covenant as members of his earthly children and family. And as he stated there in Isaiah 32:8, that the nations will be divided among the 12 tribes of Israel. Abraham will thus be the father of the whole human race, because they'll become children of Abraham by faith and by means of that new covenant. But he says, if they will not obey, that is, if any refuse to learn righteousness and to do the ways of the Lord, to speak and to think and to act, he says there's nothing for that nation or that people or that individual but destruction. Now the Lord wants his universe clean, and he's going to have this earth clean, and he's going to have full of people that love to obey the Lord, that have found out by experience that it is the only way to live, that any other way brings trouble and disaster and misunderstanding and finally death. And so these people, after the 1,000 years, will at that time have learned to love righteousness, to love it to the extent that even if all penalties for disobedience were removed, they would not disobey the Lord because they hate everything connected with it. They love the Lord because of the beauties of holiness and the reasonableness of those laws and the beautiful results and the happiness of those who keep them daily. And so all nations, you see, will be under the training of the Lord to think right, to speak right, to act right, and in that way to fulfill the obligations of the law. And then at the end of the 1,000 years, they are told that the great King of all nations, the Son of Jehovah, will step out, turn the nations over to Jehovah, and mankind will inherit the earth, just as Adam had it before he sinned, in full fellowship with the Creator, without sin, without disease, without any evil in the earth, and living everlastingly. And they'll enjoy it because life to them will be bubbling over with vitality and happiness and joy in all the ages of eternity. And this, you see, while it begins with the Jewish people, it involves that nation first, that it will spread to include all the others until all have a part and become God's people. I think that's a glorious outlook, one that is worth going through trouble for, one that is worth the patience and the long years of training that it will take. Just as the one who thinks and knows that he has to go through 4 years of college training to become a good engineer, one that knows the principles as well as the practice, that he sticks to it until he gets the full 4 years. He doesn't give up in the midst, say, oh, I've had enough, I guess I'll go out. They don't get so well, you see. They don't inherit so much. But these that inherit the earth will be those who have gone all the way and learned to love righteousness and see God in all his works, a revelation everywhere. I think there is the greatest blessings ahead of us. There is every reason to do the best we can so that we might have a share in that kingdom. Thank you.